You're listening to Shoreditch Radio. Shoreditchradio.co.uk.
Navidad con Titi Henry. Henry para Messi. Messi, el pase para Henry es buenísimo. Henry. Gol. Gol. Titi.
And it looked like it was in. It come back off the bend on Tony.
Para Alves con Messi para Xavi. Vamos a ver qué hace Xavi, esconde el balón, Xavi. ¡Qué balón para Messi! ¡Puede marcar Messi! ¡Gol! ¡Gol! ¡De Messi!
As another unforgettable Premier League season came to an end, Chelsea were crowned champions of England and Arsenal became only the seventh team to retain the FA Cup. Also on today's show and following arguably the biggest sports news story of all time, we'll dive into the undeniably murky waters over at FIFA HQ after Sepp Blatter made the U-turn of the century and finally vacated the presidential seat he has held for over 17 years. We'll be speaking to the chief football writer for the Daily Mirror, John Cross, to get his thoughts on all this and more. The rumour mill is churning fast with the transfer window almost open again. We've got a hand-picked playlist of brilliant songs in store for all of you. And of course, Take a Bow is back with a vengeance, and they all said we'd had nothing to talk about when the season was over. Welcome to Shoreditch Radio's premier football talk show. Get ready to help kick some sense back into football. This is In Off The Post. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of In Off The Post. My name is Adonis, and I'm so glad to be on the mic this afternoon ahead of what promises to be, but what has to be, the biggest show we have ever done. I mean, FIFA are under FBI investigation, we've got Crossy joining us for a special interview, and well, I simply don't know how I would manage without the man sat next to me, my co-host for the hour. Please give it up for Mr. John Christodoulou.
Thank you very much, always a pleasure.
Well, how are you, my man?
Really good, thank you.
Yeah, are you excited for the show today?
Massively. Well, lots to talk about.
Absolutely, and obviously some very tough stories for us to help our listeners to digest this afternoon, you know, some post-season drama to say the least. I mean, anyone in sports radio production will tell you that this is that dreaded time of year where you know, we actually have to do some work. I mean, you know, there's not, the players and coaches aren't actually out there on the pitch and on the touchline writing the headlines for us. So I guess what I'm saying is thank God for Sepp Blatter, no?
Definitely. Well, it's a bit of a dream story, really. I mean, I was going to say, it might be nice if they just 1 week down the line, like you say, when you still got the Champions League finals to look forward to. There's still a little bit of sport, but no, this is
not quite the final ball. You're right. And we've certainly got our work cut out for us if we stand any chance of getting through it all in the next 55 minutes or so. So without any further ado, let's kick things off with a little musical warm-up. And when we come back, we'll talk Blatter, FIFA and the FBI.
It's too hard to sleep. I got the sheets on the floor, nothing on me.
Back to the show, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the live broadcast here on the wonderful Shoreditch Radio, or indeed for catching up with the podcast, which you can download for free on the iTunes store, or if you prefer, stream via mixcloud.com. All the links you'll ever need for any of that you can find, of course, on the official Twitter page at IOTP Show, or visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/Shoreditch Radio, IOTP. Now, there really is only one place for us to start this afternoon, and that is, of course, with the resignation of the FIFA president, Sepp Blatter, who only a couple of days ago had this to say.
But first of all, I would like to give compliments and express my gratitude to His Royal Highness Prince Ali. And he has obtained a very good result, and he, in such a situation, easy, he could have said, now, let's go further. Perhaps I would receive more votes. On the other hand, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you. I thank you that you accepted me, that for the next 4 years, I will be in command of this boat called FIFA. I told you at the beginning, or when we started for this election, I like you. I like my job, and I like to be with you. I'm not perfect. Nobody is perfect. But we will do a good job together, I'm sure. So I thank you so much. I thank you for the trust and confidence. Trust and confidence. Together we go. Let's go, FIFA. Let's go, FIFA. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks to the Telegraph for that clip, but I almost don't know where to begin with this guy. I mean, what was that, John? I like you, I like me, I like my job, and I love money. I mean, it was like a cross between Borat and Barney the Dinosaur. I don't know what to do with that. And I mean, and then of course he goes on to make his usual, you know, maritime metaphors about steering the good ship FIFA towards more placid waters. And even, and this has to be the quote of the season, you know, never mind Nigel Pearson and Ostrich Gate. Okay, when he won re-election, he celebrated by saying, I'm now the president of everybody.
Big words.
I mean, no, Sip, all right, I'm afraid you're not. And of course, now that he's announced his resignation, he will soon be the president of absolutely nobody. And my God, it's about time.
I don't know what to say. I mean, it's a massive shock, really. You know, like you say, yes, well, he's just on the first, sorry, the second, he's just accepted his fifth term, another 4 years as the head of FIFA. And then the next day, all of a sudden, this giant U-turn. I mean, something's had to have happened in between them 24 hours that maybe which hasn't come out yet. But I'd really like to know what it is, because
I can see where you're going with this. And again, we have no evidence for saying that, but
no.
Nor does anyone, and yet everyone feels it. I mean, it's incredible. It's like when he came out and he acknowledged his re-election, it was kind of like, you know what I did. I know what I did. But you can't prove it. So, I mean, look, the situation really started to snowball since the Swiss authorities swooped on that five-star Borlack Hotel in Zurich. And if we can try and put the chaos that ensued into some sort of a timeline for our listeners. You know, you've got the US Attorney General, forgive me, Loretta Lynch, who alleged that corruption is rampant within the organisation. You know, as if we already didn't know that. Then the FA and UEFA call on FIFA to postpone the election. And later even asked Blatter to resign. Advice which he later ignores, especially, you know, after the African bloc and the Asian Football Confederation pledge their ongoing support for the man. Now, meanwhile, his opposite number, Prince Ali Ali bin Al Hussein of Jordan, wins enough votes to take it to a second ballot, only to then withdraw from the race altogether. And, you know, then we're forced to listen to that ludicrous acceptance speech, and are at that point resigned to the fact that we may indeed have to accept Blatter as president for at least another year or two. Or so we thought, because as you've mentioned, in a stunning turn of events, he has now announced that he will step down. And look, I tweeted this question out, I think it was last night, possibly the night before. The night he resigned, either way. And, you know, I fully expect that you're going to respond to me with the same level of derision that everyone on social media did. But I'm going to ask you anyway. John, was this a case of Blatter finally buckling under the weight of his own conscience. Or, you know, as you alluded to just a moment ago, dare I suggest that he's been leaned on by some of the authorities involved?
I think it's a combination of both. I think he probably has been leaned on because the U-turn just makes you suspect that something's there that we don't know about. But in terms of his conscience, I think no matter what you say, there are a lot of people who still respect Blatter. And he has done many good things for football. There's probably lots of things. I don't know how much the positive outweighs the negative.
No, you're absolutely right. We have to accept the fact that he's the guy who pushed for World Cups in Asia, in Africa, and really helped to grow the sport globally. Yeah. It was very important. And let's not forget, when he got in 98, there were 11 permanent members. Mm-hmm. And FIFA is now an enormous charitable, inverted commas, organisation. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are certainly good aspects to his tenure.
Yeah. So I think he probably has a legacy that he feels he wants to protect, as in, I mean, I'm not quite sure, because this is a scandal now and his name will forever be in the mix. And even if he's never, ever charged with anything, then either way, it's always going to look a bit dodgy. But I feel like to him, he probably thinks that there's enough there for people to look back on and say, oh no, Blatter, he was a really, really good president. So that from his perspective, I guess from our perspective, we're always going to think,
He oversaw the most
corruption we've ever seen in probably the biggest world sporting organisation that there is.
This is the guy that said that racism could be resolved with a handshake. Yeah. This is the guy that said to homosexuals that were nervous about attending a World Cup in Russia that they should simply refrain from engaging in any homosexual activity. And my personal highlight, with respect to women in football and how they can help raise the profile of their own sport, his response was simply, wear tighter shorts.
Yeah, he's not showered himself in glory with them three comments there. And like you say, I don't know who writes his speeches. If he hasn't got a speech writer, he should have a speech writer. Or at least a press officer there saying, no, you can't use that. I don't know. But then, I mean, it's a high-pressure job at the end of the day, but you can't defend stuff like that.
It's difficult, isn't it? And you know what? I just can't shake the feeling that, you know, we've mentioned all of the positive contributions that he's made to the global sport, but you can't shake the feeling that all of it was done with nothing else in mind than the consolidation of his own power. He's kind of painted as this, you know, old school, you know, Tony Soprano, Marlon Brando type godfather that is only concerned with his own position. You know, it wasn't about the globalisation of the world's most popular sport, about grassroots charity work or breaking down barriers. Everything good that Blatter can lay claim to over the last almost two decades was done with a purely self-serving interest. That's something that's going to be argued, you know, against him for the rest of time.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's any getting away from that. I mean, there's really no transparency throughout the entire organisation. In terms of reform, he's always maybe mentioned it here and there, but nothing has ever happened, so hopefully this will be the start of that. But like you say, how can you have a president who's been, you know, the president of the United States of America only gets two terms, 8 years, and yet it's just ridiculous. And many of the executive committee, like you say, it's a massive organisation, but the people at the top and in these committees have largely remained the same, and it's as if no one wants to fall out of favour with the person at the top. Because once you're out of FIFA, you're out.
Sleeping
and it's very, very
dishes.
Hard to get back into that circle. Yes.
All right, so I guess, look, the real question is then, you know, FIFA's reputation and, you know, its surviving members are so inexplicably linked to Blatter, you know, to the £100 million worth of dirty money, alleged, to Jerome Valk, the FIFA General Secretary, accused of £6 million worth of bribes in the run-up to the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, to Jack Warner, the former FIFA VP who was pictured dancing in the streets of Trinidad hours after he left prison in an ambulance complaining of exhaustion. You know, taking all of this and more into account, where does FIFA go from here?
I take a bigger person than me to answer that question. I think it's obviously a new president needs to be elected. I don't know who that could be. There's lots of people in the running.
Well, who are they looking at?
So, obviously, you had the people who ran. We've already spoken about Prince Ali. So, he wants, I believe, to be at least the interim president until they call this extraordinary Congress, which is 4 months away. But Figo has not... I don't think he's put his hat back into the ring, so to speak, but I guess he was one of the people who were in the running, so it's a possibility. Ginola has definitely put his hat in the ring.
Has.
but I'm not very sure that will ever happen. But then you've got some very, very serious contenders as well. You've got the likes of Platini, who could move from UEFA to maybe the head of FIFA.
But still another man within, almost under the umbrella. Don't get the feeling that it has to be someone.
I think it has to be someone new.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned this off air as well. I like David Gill, who was the one person to maybe stand up to Blatter as well, which was really good. And then you think, okay, so he has no affiliation with this.
And still has his integrity intact.
Exactly.
After the last week.
And he has a brilliant track record with Manchester United, with UEFA, with the FA, with everyone.
Yeah.
Whether he's ready for that massive role, I don't know, because he's only part of the executive committee. So, but they're the heads of FAs, head of the German FA, the head of Dutch FA. So there are people there who probably have the experience to step into that role. But I mean, we're looking at reform everywhere. It's not just that position that needs to be refilled. It would be positions of heads of international, like CONMEBOL and all of these other different organisations. So it's a different, I mean, incredible. Like I say, I don't even know where you would start.
It's true. And I should mention that our producer, Dell, was knocking on the window and telling me that David Dean would be the...
David Dean.
Yeah.
I think he's been out of the game too long. But he looked better than Blatter.
Absolutely. And look, we're not quite done with this one yet. And of course, we encourage our listeners to get in touch with their own thoughts on the matter at IOTB Show on Twitter. But let's pause briefly because it's time for a short musical interlude now, after which we're joined by the chief football writer for the Daily Mirror, Mr. John Cross. To In Off The Post here on Shoreditch Radio, and it's with our proud mantra of kicking some sense back into football that we continue our discussion of the latest FIFA scandal, and boy are we in some esteemed company to do it, as we now welcome the chief football writer for the Daily Mirror, John Cross. Crossy, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, very well. Nice to be with you.
Well, we're very, very grateful that you could be with us, and first of all, you know, thank you for agreeing to join us in the midst of what must be an incredibly busy moment in time for you personally. You know, John, I don't mind admitting to the listeners what a huge influence you've been on me and my own aspirations of a career in journalism. And of course, it's unearthing stories like this one that really inspire people to take up journalism in the first place, no?
Well, yeah, I think so, really. And that's very nice of you to say. You know, I'm as enthusiastic as a journalist as I was really when I started out. So, you know, I always think it's fantastic to see sort of kind of people breaking through and breaking stories, most importantly, really. I think this week has been a real triumph, I think, for journalism, not just at home, but I think obviously abroad. I think clearly the American investigators, you know, have close links with the American media. They've been all over this. The Sunday Times investigation now looks, you know, fantastic and sort of really unlocked a lot, I think. And then the sort of the coverage, I think, across all spectrums of the media in the English press, I think it's been fascinating to watch, really, and sort of read and view. So it has been a fascinating, I think, week or so.
Yeah, quite. I couldn't agree with you more. And I suppose one question that I have to ask you, considering, you know, the meticulous fashion in which someone in your position must follow the sport, even more so than we do here, did you see it coming?
No, I didn't. I'll be honest with you. To such an extent, wasn't originally going to go out to Zurich last week when the story broke. No one did, if I'm honest. I do think there was an element of kind of revisionism going on there. Obviously, there's been loads of coverage and investigations down the years into FIFA, but I think it's the timing that has caught lots of people by surprise to such an extent that actually I wasn't down to cover it. Hadn't got a trip booked. Even some of the more dedicated sports diarists who sort of cover this politics day in, day out, that's their life, that's their livelihood, were expecting quite a dull week or so in Zurich. They didn't expect too much to come out of it. I think they expected Blacks to get in without too much of a story, bit of a landslide, and on you go. And I actually flew out sort of kind of after the events, dramatic events of last Wednesday, which sort of rocked the world, didn't they, really? And then covered it. And it is great fun to cover. But look, I think the thing is that I got a sense then after the election that the FA felt that things were afoot. But as Greg Dyke was saying yesterday, he never expected it to happen in 4 days. So I wouldn't say it was completely unexpected that Blatter is going and said that he will resign. But what I would say is I think the timing of it has just caught everyone in all senses, basically, last week. And then also the developments and how it developed so quickly, I think, has been incredible to watch. And it's been incredible to see a major organisation like FIFA completely unravel in such a short space of time.
I couldn't agree with you more. And of course, myself and my co-host, John, I've got another John with me today, John Christodoulou, and we've been in the studio all this afternoon denouncing the impact of these recent allegations and that on the reputation, the global reputation of FIFA in the aftermath of the resignation. But in your opinion, where does FIFA go from here?
I think it's a really good question. I actually think a few people suggested maybe it's time to disband the organisation. When we've had major sort of scandals, I think either domestically or sort of worldwide, sometimes organisations have broken up. I mean, blimey, you look at sort of almost, sort of athletics here in this country, sort of kind of gone through various sort of guises, for example. And I just wonder worldwide, I mean, the Olympic movement, obviously, has been going on for so many years, through so many generations and lifetimes. But actually, I think it's reinvented itself in relatively recent times. I think FIFA must either disband and completely rise from the ashes again, or completely reinvent itself, rather like the Olympic movement has. I actually think a few people suggested today that it should perhaps be run by someone without a footballing link. When I say that, I mean someone who is briefed on football, perhaps, but much more of a business acumen, who could come at it from a different angle and perhaps be a little bit more fair, look forward to running it as a business, clean it up, hopefully repair the sort of tarnished reputation that it has right now, and hopefully move it forward, because I do think that the whole organisation is in such a mess.
Hi John, sorry, if I could just ask you a quick question. I was just thinking, so if FIFA was to disband, like you say, what happens then to all the other, the UEFA, CONMEBOL, the CAF, all of these sort of associations? What happens in the future then? Because obviously, would you not assume maybe bickering, or when it comes to organising World Cups or big tournaments and big rules, what will happen then?
I do think that when I say disband, I do think in its current guise, I think it needs to either completely split up and reform itself as something slightly different, because I do think there's clearly so many skeletons in the cupboard, really, on it. But I do think you need something at the top of the game. Almost an umbrella, really, for the game worldwide, but for the various confederations and the associations, really, to report into and to be under the control of. I think that's only fair. But I do think that we need an absolute root and branch, I think, examination of what's gone wrong at FIFA. And I feel sorry for some really good people at FIFA, because I do know some people at FIFA behind the scenes, and this will be leave them devastated, really. or go wrong. And I think that's such a difficult thing to move away from. And I think to that end, that's why I say perhaps you need to leave things behind so you can sort of almost go again and sort of kind of try and reinvent yourself again, because I think it's going to be very, very difficult, I think, for moving forward over the next 10 years or so, unless you have a complete change and a complete sea direction. Then actually I do think that for people to take the organisation seriously, it's going to be very difficult.
John, I think it's really interesting. It's a really interesting point you make, because, of course, if they are actually found guilty in whatever investigations the FBI eventually carry out and they are deemed a criminal organisation, of course, they're blacklisted and then cannot transact with the likes of Adidas, Coca-Cola, TV broadcasters can't then get involved. And essentially, we are looking at the demise of FIFA.
Yeah, I see that. I think that it's going to be very difficult for them. I think what will really hurt FIFA, much more than Blatter, is if major sponsors walk away. As soon as you get that, you get a domino effect, because if one pulls out... I mean, if I were Visa, for example, yeah, I'd be seriously worried about that. They've voiced concerns already. They're clearly anxious about it, because after all, they are a financial institution. They've made it very clear that, to the best of my knowledge, they've certainly not been involved on any level. But it's very, very difficult, I think, to kind of be that sort of financial institution and then be involved in an organisation which is under suspicion of financial wrongdoing. You really, really don't want to be involved in that. And I think that's a major thing for FIFA. It's obviously a huge concern for Visa. But a bigger concern for FIFA, should they walk away, they've got this kind of five main sponsors with two World Cup sponsors. The moment that any one of those flinches and moves away is the moment that FIFA, I think, begin to panic and begin to realise that actually this is very, very serious indeed. Of course, they know that already. But actually, I do think there sort of almost comes a time when perhaps FIFA need to sort of look at themselves and realise that actually this is about integrity as well as big money.
Yeah, quite right. And brilliantly put. And John, as we've got you here, forgive me now as I attempt, you know, possibly the most audacious of radio segues, but in stark contrast to the ignominy of FIFA, which we've been discussing, stands last weekend's FA Cup final, where Arsenal strolled across the Wembley turf with grace and played such free-flowing and pure football. So, you know, I'm going to start with the obvious question. Is this Arsenal team now capable of challenging for the league title?
I think it's a great question. I think it's a question we've been asking for how many summers now. And they've always fallen short, haven't they, really? I thought, actually, the previous season really sort of kind of dominated sort of title race for so long, but ultimately falling short in the running, sort of promised so much. I think this season was so disappointing in the first half of the season. Second half of the season, again, gave a glimpse of what this team is capable of. But I think it's about potential at the moment still. And what I mean by that is I think that they still need two or three players of great quality, still a really strong number one goalkeeper, perhaps another midfielder, and also I would suggest a different striker to give an alternative to Giroud, to Walcott, whoever it may be, just someone who absolutely kind of is a little bit different from what they have already. Is Welbeck in the background, of course, who can play sort of kind of on the left or through the middle. I just think, though, that they need someone else to kind of really sort of balance it and kind of give the front line a bit of a boost. And I just think they're not far away, but I just also would make the point that any team that wins the title always strengthens to try and retain it. You must do that.
Unless you make
the challenges always must get stronger, because ultimately they've fallen short. I think the FA Cup final was as enjoyable as a big game for Arsenal as I can remember in a long time, because all the elements came together. They passed it brilliantly. The movement was good. The pace, the power was excellent. They really sort of mesmerised, I think, at times. It was absolutely fabulous to see. I still think that in the squad, it does need significant strengthening to really move on again, because you can bet your bottom dollar that Chelsea will strengthen, and they've just won the title by a landslide. Man City, I think, will rebuild. I think it's interesting Man United still well within their financial fair play limits because of sort of their kind of huge and the title race next season will be even stronger. So I think if Arsene Wenger thinks he can get away with signing just one, or maybe even two, then I think it would be a mistake. And I do think the squad still needs major strengthening.
And you've mentioned the man himself there, Mr. Arsene Wenger. While we're on the subject, do you still believe that he's the right man for this club? Do you feel that the Wenger out debate can finally be put to rest after two FA Cups in the last 2 years?
Well, I don't think he'll ever go away, because I always think he's still kind of divide supporters.
Until they lose next.
Like no other. But, look, I've sometimes thought, oh, Garner, now it's maybe time for change, or, you know, gone through periods where I thought, Garner, he needs to change himself and kind of reinvent himself. But I just feel that he's emerged from the darkness, I think, whereby I think Arsenal had to be run differently because of the Emirates. And I do think now the club is in a very, very stable, strong position moving forward. And I think to deny him the opportunity to go on and strengthen again would be wrong. I think he's shown in the second half of the season what he's all about in terms of the style of play, the potential. I think the wonderful players that he's brought in, I think it's fabulous to see at the moment. So, yes, passionately, I still think that he's the right man for the job. But I do think that hopefully he can leave some of his old, what should we say, traits or faults behind this summer and actually spend, in a few areas, bringing in a real good goalkeeper, Petr Cech, for example, and strengthen where the team needs it. Because I think if he does that, I still think Arsene Wenger will be judged on whether or not he wins the title rather than the FA Cup. And I think if he can strengthen, then I think we'll see him in the second half of the season that he could win the title again, I really do.
So I was just thinking as well, you've probably got your ear closer to the ground than most of us. In terms of, we'll be discussing like rumours a little bit later in transfers, but is there anyone, have you heard anything about who might be moving where, etc., especially, I guess, in the case of Arsenal?
Well, I think Arsenal could do Petr Cech if they really wanted. So I think that's one to watch, and I still think that's a really good chance to happen. I do think that's on the agenda. It's a question of whether, I guess, you could keep sort of Szczesny or Spina happy, but sometimes you have to be ruthless and move on. So that'll be interesting, I think, to see whether that can happen. I think they might look for a more mobile midfielder. I think the Man United's interest in Schneidlin is very real. I think, Milner and Ings will go to Liverpool within a short space of time. I think there's a sort of interesting sort of developments ahead, really. I think Man City will really spend big, and I do think that they might sort of kind of go for some seriously big signings this summer. I do actually think they'll probably end up with Raheem Sterling. I think Chelsea might get Griezmann. I think he sort of almost tops their list. So I do think all round, I think it could be and has got the makings of a really exciting summer full of spectacular transfers.
Absolutely. Crossy, thank you once again. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. You know, we know how busy you must be right now, so we really do appreciate you taking the time. Before you go, of course, there is the small matter of you choosing your favourite song to see us through to the next section. So what's it going to be?
I've gone Stone Roses, She Bangs and Jumps.
You heard it here first. We're back after this. We'll be right back. welcome back to In Off The Post, where, just in case you managed to miss it, John Cross, the chief football writer for the Daily Mirror, joined us to examine the fallout from Blattergate and to assess Arsenal's season in the wake of their Wembley success.
Now, I really like that term, Blattergate.
Yeah,
I think it fits nice really well.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I mean, it actually sounds appropriate, because I remember, I mean, you know, as I do in my spare time, I did a bit of reading around Nixon and Watergate, of course. And his re-election campaign was, you know, following the Watergate scandal, was based solely on the idea that he fudged things up so badly that he was the only guy that could fix it. And I actually feel, I think that's exactly, it's quite successful. It's exactly what Sepp Blatter went down the road. You know, I know where the dead bodies are hidden. You ain't going to find them without me. But I digress. Obviously, John Cross, he started us off there with a bit of a review of the FA Cup final. And of course, we are going to reminisce on another wonderful season of Premier League football in just a bit. But first, it's time for this. Yes, it's almost that time of year again where contracts can evaporate before your very eyes. The summer transfer window is almost open. And if you've got a headache from these swarming rumours around the brightest talents in world football, we're going to try and restore some sanity to the various debates. Very simple format. John is, of course, also known as our resident betting guru around Shoreditch Radio. And so I'm simply going to throw up a name, John, right? You're going to walk us through what the odds are telling us. And then I'm also going to ask you to say, answer a multiple choice question on where they may end up. Right? Sounds simple.
Okay.
Simple enough. So let's give it a go, okay? There's only one man to start with, Raheem Sterling.
Okay. So we've just heard Cross say that he's probably on his way to City.
Mm-hmm. Anyone against Crossy there?
I'm gonna agree with him. The odds would tell you that he's 2-1 to stay at Liverpool.
Wow.
But obviously we have this big dispute over his contract, etc., etc. So next favourite, 3-1 is City. So there's a strong possibility that could happen, and I agree with Crossy there, it probably will. But Madrid,
well, Rafa Benitez appointed today, or yesterday as it were.
Yep, and even though he said he was not going to talk about players, he did say he admired Raheem Sterling. So,
he did.
I mean, they have an abundant wealth of talent at their in their team, Real Madrid. So it'd be
it's
hard
never
to
stopped
see.
Him before.
That's the thing, though. It has never stopped them before. It'd be difficult to see where he would fit. I'm not sure if I'd take Sterling over Bale.
Okay.
But maybe that's where the rumour mill happens and then the circus happens as well. And
chain begins.
Sterling
yeah.
goes to Madrid. Then maybe we're looking at exits from Madrid.
Okay, so A, stay at Liverpool. B, Manchester City. C, Real Madrid. Where are you going?
I'm going to say City.
I'm making a note of this, okay, for the record. So you're going B, City.
Yeah.
I'm going City. Okay, moving on. One thing we couldn't get Crossy to touch on was Theo Walcott. Obviously, a little bit of an ongoing dispute over his contract. Wants some, you know, assurances of playing time. Mm-hmm. Something the FA Cup final would have done his chances no harm at all. But what are the bookies saying?
So at the moment, he's actually 5-1 to go Liverpool.
Wow.
Their favourites to sign him. United are actually second favourites to sign him at 18-1.
Come on.
I'm not sure if... But then he has pace, so I don't know if I'd take him.
All right.
We've seen it happen before.
Okay. Okay, so we'll say A, stay at Arsenal. B, Liverpool. C, Man United.
I think he will stay at Arsenal.
I also think he will stay at Arsenal. Are we going to disagree today? Let's keep it Premier League for the meantime. Everyone is talking about this boy. David De Gea.
David De Gea. So, interestingly, his odds, he was shorter odds to go to Real Madrid than he is to go to than he is to stay at Man United.
Wow.
Currently today. So, obviously, he was one of the players Rafa Benitez wouldn't be drawn on commenting during his press conference. But all signs, as much as it breaks my heart, looks like he may be swayed. But if you're going to do the ABC.
ABC. A is stay, B is Real Madrid, and C is Bournemouth.
Bournemouth.
We need a C.
I'm hoping that he's going to realise the grass isn't always greener, okay? And he's going to stick
this
with Man United.
This is a heart over head decision
Definitely.
You're making right now. But this is where I'm going to get the point. So you're saying he's going to stay. I'm saying he's going to Real Madrid.
Really?
Okay. Just because I'd love.
And one final one, as far as the Premier League is concerned, we saw him in action in the FA Cup final, although it's questionable how much action he was actually in. Christian Benteke.
So once again, we're looking at the same teams here who were sort of in and around Liverpool, 8-11.
Mm-hmm.
His favourites to go there. Then Arsenal, Tottenham and Atletico Madrid are all 8-1 to swoop in. So, I mean, it's pretty much odds-wise looking like he's definitely going Liverpool. There were a lot of bigger teams as well who were only 10-1 into him. We're talking Man United, Chelsea, Real Madrid.
So we're talking widespread.
Yeah.
Interest on Christian Benteke.
But obviously, that's taken into consideration that it looks like he's going to Liverpool. Mm. But then, if he doesn't, then I'm sure there's a host of teams that would take him on.
Absolutely.
And he probably thinks he's run its course with Villa. As in FA Cup final, is it going to get any better than that next season? Probably not. Fair so enough. I mean,
okay, no, that's interesting. I'm going to mark that one as A, stay where he is. B, Liverpool / Spurs. C, Atletico Madrid.
Oh.
Where are you going?
Because you've given me Liverpool / Spurs, I'm going to go there. But I don't see him...
It's a conservative bet.
The Spurs one is actually quite interesting because whether Soldado will stay or go back to Spain or something like that, it will mean that they probably need a striker because Adebayor is looking like he's probably going to leave as well. So then well
according
just
to Pochettino, all of those guys are up for grabs this summer. Soldado, Adebayor, Lamela...
Wow.
I mean, there could be a few out of the exit door at White Hart Lane.
So, they're probably going to be looking to bring attackers in. And Benteke, they've got quite a big Belgian contingent at Tottenham. So, he could fit in quite well, it might be.
Okay. I'm going to say Liverpool. We've both gone Liverpool Spurs. What am I talking about? Okay. Let's stray from the Premier League if we can. Although, of course, some of these guys could be in the Premier League come August. How about Atletico Madrid's Antoine Griezmann.
Griezmann. So once again, we already heard Crossy speaking about Griezmann, and he's 2-5 to stay at Atletico Madrid.
Okay.
So it's more than likely that he will stay there, and he's only been there a season, so it'd be rather quick move. But his next one is 2-1. He's ready to go to Chelsea.
I'm going to throw this one up. Euro 2016 in France. If he makes the move and it doesn't pay... I mean, Atletico Madrid, at least he's playing. And he's playing well. Mm-hmm. He makes the move to Chelsea, let's say. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take off in this as it has for Cuadrado, as an example. Yeah. He jeopardises his position in that team, doesn't he?
Definitely, I think so. I think that's the perfect example as well, Cuadrado.
Why he might stay.
Because Cuadrado's got like the Copa America coming up now. Yeah. And he's not even a dead cert to start for Colombia.
He's played about seven minutes this season.
So I could quite easily, if I saw him go to Chelsea, Griezmann... he'd go the same way because there is a lot of competition
in
that squad.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we say A, stay, B, Chelsea, and C, give me a viable C.
Well, Bayern were 8-1. Bayern. So it's still quite good odds if you go Bayern. And they're probably looking for Ribery, Robin, I don't know if you call them understudies, But,
okay, so who are you going with?
I'm going to say he's going to stick. And like you say, he's playing time.
I'm going to risk it all. On Chelsea.
Okay. I think
they're going to strengthen, and he is a fantastic prospect. Okay, Mats Hummels.
So once again, this is a player who's he's evens to stay at Dortmund, and he's already come out and said that he probably will stay at Dortmund for another season.
Mm-hmm.
New manager as well, but he was shorter odds to go to Man United, 8-13.
Has that got anything to? Well, I suppose it has something to do with the lack of Champions League football.
And possibly Man United will have Champions League football and hopefully we're getting better. Mm. So we're looking like a more attractive proposition. But
you hope.
We hope.
And C, give me a viable C.
Well, City, neighbours, 8-1.
Oh, that'd be harsh. And they certainly need to strengthen in terms of cover at centre-half. Although he wouldn't come in as cover, he'd be a starter for sure.
Yeah, definitely, I think so.
What does that mean for Mangala? Wouldn't it be good?
City have had their fair share of centre-backs. They're going through them quite quickly. They don't have a long life.
You're right. Yeah. So where are you going with this one? Stick or twist?
I think he's going to stay at Dortmund for another season.
And I think he's going United.
Yeah? Well, I hope I'm wrong on that one.
I think we're learning something about our betting team. Falcao. Someone who struggled at Manchester United this season. A question that we've raised on one or two occasions over the last season.
So... I'm sure everyone's heard or read that he wants a move back to the Premier League. Not with us, though. He's evens to go Chelsea.
I've heard he's desperate to move to Chelsea.
I heard he's willing to take a pay cut. And he didn't want to take a pay cut to play for us again. But maybe it was in his contract, I don't know.
Okay.
But so he's evens to go Chelsea. He's 9-2 to stay at Monaco. Let's not forget Monaco. Still a pretty big club. Did well in the Champions League. So could be a good option for him. But he's also 6-1 to go Juve. 10-1 to go Inter. 10-1 to go Real Madrid. And there's even PSG at 12-1. I mean, the clubs, there is a long list. That's just six of them. But
all right, I'm going to give you a tempting one here. A is stay. B, you can go Chelsea. Or C, you can go anywhere else.
I'm not sure if Chelsea will take the risk on him. I think Mourinho's audacious enough that he probably thinks he can get the best out of him.
I was just thinking that. Yeah. It sounds like if you tempted him with that offer, if you said to him, well, are you good enough? Can you revive this guy's career?
So they've got rid of Drogba. They do need another striker because Remy is not always fully fit. Costa's not always
looking
fully
fit. Looking like Bamford won't come into the first team squad for next year. Might get another year with Borough. Or a Premier League club, of course.
I'm leaning towards anywhere else. I think Monaco would probably try and cash in if they could, but I'm not sure Chelsea would take the risk. To be honest, I think they could probably buy a more proven striker anyway if they wanted to.
So, I'm going with you, anywhere else. And I think if Aguero doesn't end up at Real Madrid, they might make a move for him.
So I will give you extra points if he goes to City.
If I predict the whole chain, I win, right? Okay, I'm liking this game. Let's do one or two more. Arturo Vidal.
Vidal?
Yeah.
So
Juventus superstar.
Juventus superstar going for the treble this weekend.
Of course.
Could have had the big knee injury at the World Cup. I know we wanted him pretty desperately, but weren't willing to take the chance. Odds-wise, he's now only 8-1 to go to Man United next season.
Okay.
He's most likely 2-5 to stay at Juve, and if they win the Champions League, well, actually, if they win the Champions League, go either way. I think he either want to stay because they've done so well, or maybe he thinks he's accomplished everything they can because Juve really run over the Serie A.
Absolutely.
He's then 2-1 to go to Arsenal.
Ooh, yep. Interesting. Is that anything to do with our Chilean connection?
Could be. Couldn't.
Apparently, they have the same agent, and I've also heard of a link between Khedira and Juventus, which could potentially dislodge him.
Wow. So this is where we're seeing, one door closing, another one opening, type of thing.
All right, one more, because I've enjoyed it so much.
You didn't do the game, though.
Which game?
They still haven't decided where he's going to go.
Oh, we're not, sorry. A, so A is stay, B is Man United, C is Arsenal. We know where I'm going. Arsenal.
Ooh. Wish you went anywhere else.
Should I give you a D? No.
I don't think, I think he's going to stay.
I think you made a pretty compelling argument for him leaving.
Yeah, I know, and I don't know why. But I don't think he'll go Arsenal. I think you've got so many midfielders. I don't think Wenger will want to spend money on him, if that makes sense. I mean, you already passed up on Fabregas. Would you go for, I mean, Vidal's more box-to-box, possibly, but I don't think he'll want to go to you.
Like a combative midfielder. I mean, the Arsenal fans would be crying out for this one.
Yeah. That's actually a very, very tough one. It's probably the most difficult one so far. Because I do feel like he will leave, but I don't know if he'll leave for either of us.
All right, I see where you're going with this. Here's D, anywhere else.
Yeah, can I, yeah, please.
Okay. And finally, let's go with Edinson Cavani.
So he's 10-11 to stay at PSG. And they've just had a record-breaking season as well.
Yeah.
On their treble.
Quadruple, wouldn't it?
Quadruple. He is 2-1 to go Juve, 6-1 to go Man United, 5-1 to go Atletico Madrid.
Is there any chance of this boy staying?
And 10-1 to go Arsenal.
Wow.
Obviously, the odds favour him staying, but with Ibrahimovic up front, and I know he's often palmed out towards the left or the right,
yeah,
and he's pretty much won everything there is to win in Ligue 1 now.
Still scoring goals even from a wide position. It's quite impressive.
He's got a very, very good goal tally. I think he could go. No, I don't think he'll go back to Italy. Actually, there's a very good chance he could go to Atletico Madrid, and I think they've got a really strong record of taking on good strikers. They always get rid of one and then replace him with another one. whether he wants to challenge.
It's interesting with the appointment of Rafa Benitez. If he does want to, you know, put a stamp on the team, you're only going to get 2 years at Real Madrid. We know that.
Mm.
So if he's going to make a move and put a stamp on a Real Madrid team that he can really call his own, a lot of these players suddenly look like prospects for Real Madrid this summer.
Well, I mean, Real Madrid are always in the market for any player, really, and there's no fee too high, and they're not scared to absolutely axe a Galactico in absolutely favour of another one. But
and Arsenal fans everywhere thank them for it.
All right, look, brilliant work as always from our resident betting guru. Agree with us, disagree with us, get in touch right now at IOTP Show, and we'll give you a shout out live on Shoreditch Radio. Don't go anywhere as we get the final word on the 2014-15 season, and Take a Bow is not to be missed. That's next here on In Off the Post. Well, John, it's been another compelling year in the Premier League this season. Chelsea swept the board in terms of major domestic silverware and, of course, in the end-of-season awards as well. Firstly, did you agree with Jose Mourinho being awarded manager of the season?
Yep.
Absolutely, right?
I mean, you could possibly have made compelling arguments for Swansea manager Gary Monk.
I'm about to.
Ronald Koeman.
Yeah.
But he was the best manager of the entire... When you're talking about the entire season, his team won the league pretty much by a landslide. So, I don't think... I mean, you can't really argue... He didn't get a Manager of the Month award, though, throughout the season, I don't believe.
No, he didn't.
So, that way you could say he was never standout in any one month, but maybe, you know, his team won the league and they won it so convincingly. I don't think you can really argue with it.
It's difficult for me to argue with you on any of those fronts. You're absolutely right. They won it, you know, almost at an absolute canter towards the end of the year. But I also find it difficult to award him personally, considering the financial strength of that club. He was able to go out and buy three players that he knew he needed, irrespective of how much they would cost him.
Yeah.
And...
But is that... I mean, to have that at your disposal and still pick the three white players, he knew where he needed to strengthen. And he usually said this season, he's not going to change his squad, but he will bring in one or two players where he needs to reinforce. And I still think that is good managerial tactically as well. He knows where he needs... Because, like Ross said, you can't stand still in this league.
No.
You have to continually improve, and he's done that. And
well, I mean, you consider what he did with John Terry this season.
Oh, he's been absolutely... I mean, I've not always been John Terry's biggest fan, but he's been absolutely superb.
Absolutely. Yeah. Played every single game. And the way that he creates that... I mean, we've spoken about this before, the siege mentality that Jose Mourinho is so good at creating. And he really does get everyone on board. Used very few players in respect to the competition, the chasing pack, and still managed to pull it off so easily. So, no, maybe we cannot argue that one. You don't feel that Gary Monk was at least a very close second, considering, you know, he lost his best player in the January transfer window, and they operate on a very, very tight budget, and still, you know, always a combative side, or a technically very good side, a well-organised side. And we're talking about a relatively inexperienced manager here operating at the highest level.
Swansea did very, very well. I mean, they broke their points record, didn't they? They another top 10 finish. I think I would have had him third.
Behind?
Koeman.
Why Koeman?
I think because that Southampton saw so much change over the summer. Basically, the very core of their squad, I mean, we've said it loads of times, got like ripped apart. And, okay, he had money to spend, so you could maybe put that against him. But at the same time, I think he bought well. He loaned well, and best defence in the league behind Chelsea by a goal. It says mass, and they're going to be in Europe next season.
Williams,
yeah. So I think,
thanks to Arsenal.
So I think for a club that was expected to do well, really not have a great season at all, he's just defied expectation.
A lot of people expected them to be relegated, so in that sense they've done remarkably well,
fantastically, I think. So that would be my top three personally.
Fair enough. And of course the LMA didn't agree. They went with Eddie Howe for the manager of the season, which again is incredibly difficult to argue against.
I mean, they've had an absolutely fantastic season. Bournemouth, they led the championship for a long time as well. and they scored lots of goals, which is, I mean, it's easier in the Championship, I guess, than it's going to be in the Premier League next season. But, I mean, and it's strange for it to go to a Championship manager. Mm. Don't often see it. But it was, they were, he was
again,
a deserved
that,
winner,
that speaks
yeah.
volumes for the job that he did, especially at his age as well. And let's move from managers to the players themselves. Mm-hmm. Hazard obviously swept the board. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, I can't argue it there, yeah, as well. I think he was sublime for a lot of the season, especially the second half.
We were in here before mm-hmm. that Player of the Season award was announced, and we were talking about his closest rival being Harry Kane.
Yeah.
I remember saying he did not have a right to even be in the same category as Eden Hazard. And, of course, Alexis Sanchez, Diego Costa, Fabregas. I'm going to start naming the Chelsea squad now. But I certainly think Sanchez ran him close, especially with what he did in the FA Cup final. And that's not my bias talking. That's no, an incredible first year in the Premier League.
Absolutely. I can't even think of the adjective to describe his leap. Because for a summer signing who you don't really expect in their first season to do so well, he's I mean, he scored more goals than Hazard. I think he made more assists as well. Yeah, by one more assist. Right. So, like, by statistically, he did do a lot better. But I think when it came to the voting, that time of the season, he sort of just weaned off a little bit.
Mm.
He sort of had, like, he burnt out and he needed a few games rest. And Hazard, at that point, just became the absolute
Chelsea across the line.
Exactly. They didn't have Costa. They didn't have all this attacking talent, which we expected, you know, to score them goals. And mm-hmm. he was the one that just kept doing it for them. And I think he pretty much got them over the line, like you say, towards the end of the season. And voting is a big... When they vote, it's just as important as...
Yeah, quite, you know? Right.
And like you say,
for me, they vote too early.
Yeah, definitely. I think so.
Fair enough. Yeah. And look, it's not just about those top four. We are gonna branch out from them just momentarily and talk about the teams that went down. QPR, Burnley and Hull, obviously relegated. We have to mention Leicester's miraculous escape. I mean, did we not even mention Nigel Pearson for the Manager of the Year award?
Good shout. I mean, I guess because he had such a terrible first half this season, it's hard to bring it back. But like you say, I mean,
he almost talked himself out of the running as well.
And we're talking about Blatter's quotes, he's had a couple bad ones as well.
Yeah, quite right.
But in terms of miraculous comebacks, I mean, it wasn't a final day pitch invasion type thing, but it was a series of very, very solid performances and obviously 3 points after 3 points after 3 points. Fantastic. And they were safe by the end of the...
In fact, and one player, we're going to draw back to the argument we just finished, that epitomised that for Leicester all season long, mm-hmm. Esteban Cambiaso. What a signing.
Fantastic. I mean, I'm quite surprised that he went to Leicester, to be honest. Right. There's a few players who've come out very well from the Leicester thing. Vardy as well, who's got his England call up. So
earned it for you?
I think it's nice to see Hodgson not looking at the top players. I mean, I know it's only a friendly and then may possibly one qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he'll get any game time is also another thing. But to be in and around the squad to see how it all works, and he works so, so hard, like many of the Leicester team do, that he should be there. I mean, he had a good end to the season. And like you say, he's something that other teams won't know how to deal with because they really probably don't know much about him.
No, fair enough. And look, I'm sorry to end it on a bit of a sour note, but one team that we have to mention... Our Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ended. I mean, if anything, they were fortunate that Pardew didn't leave any sooner. They just always had the sense that they'd already gained enough points to be safe
yep.
or to remain safe. Obviously, pulled off, got the 3 points on the final day just to make sure. But I mean, how are Newcastle to recover from what has happened in the last few months of the season?
So, I would say firstly, looking at a new manager has to be done. I mean, John Carver seems like a really nice guy. Newcastle through and through.
You're talking about the best coach in the Premier League.
But I just don't think he's cut out for that position. And I think it's not his fault. I think his team were on holiday from February. They just stopped playing and then it all of a sudden just became... They never thought they were going to go down. And sometimes that's the worst frame of mind you could possibly be in.
Do you not think it all filters down from a, you know, a pretty poisonous, toxic owner? In that, you know, I heard a story a couple of days ago that Jonas Gutierrez, let's not forget, someone who came back from an incredibly serious illness, to then score and you know, ensure their Premier League safety, is then notified by text. Not even his phone was texted. They texted Ryan Taylor, and Ryan Taylor was then told to pass the phone to Jonas Gutierrez to deliver the same message that they were both being released.
That's... That's really horrible to hear, to be honest. And you don't want any professional to be treated that way. I mean, and like you say, the guy who scored the goal that's going to keep you up and has been through so much has epitomised that fight that Newcastle, like, seen
the themselves. The fans were desperate for, absolutely.
But I don't know if that's all Mike Ashley. I think there's good things about Mike Ashley and there's bad things about Mike Ashley. The fact that he took on Newcastle when they were really struggling, they're breaking even, they're making money, really. Okay, he's not investing in the club like a lot of people want him to.
And he has promised to do that.
Yeah, that very interesting interview.
Yeah.
His first ever interview.
Interestingly, he didn't disclose how much he'd be investing.
Yeah. I mean, they have spent money, probably not as much as they need to challenge for titles and silverware. I think he probably wants them to win a cup.
Mm.
And when he says he's not going to leave until they win something, I think that's probably the only thing that they will. They're never going to win the league.
And look, it's a massive issue, Newcastle Football Club, right now. It's something that we could easily dedicate an episode to. And by all means, if the listeners want us to do that, then certainly let us know, because I would love to talk about this in more detail. But as you said, I mean, it's something that isn't going to be resolved very quickly. A manager, first of all.
Yeah.
But who?
Well, so I've heard rumours of Patrick Vieira. I don't know how true they are. I mean, I really don't know. Who is out there to take on that job? Steve McLaren, possibly. But
see, that's who I think will get it.
Yeah. I think he's a very good manager. He could do it. But they just, he managed Middlesbrough as well. So whether Newcastle fans will take to him is another thing. It's one of these. I think Newcastle fans are very hard to please. And unless they find a world-class manager from Newcastle, then I don't think anyone will ever be good enough. Because let's face it, you look at Pardew's record for Newcastle, and I mean, you see what he was doing with that squad, and then you see what he'd done to Crystal Palace as well. I mean,
Were the fans then the architects of their own downfall? In being so desperate to get Pardew out of there, and being so desperate to see a Geordie run the club?
I think a little bit, yeah. Definitely.
Let's leave it there. John, I certainly feel as though we've honestly covered all of the bases on today's show. We've denounced Blatter and examined the extent of the damage done to FIFA. We've run the rule over the season as we saw it. And of course, also tried to restore some order to the whirlwind transfer sagas that continue to rage on. Nothing left now, but for someone to take a bow.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that, take a bow. You have been immense.
It's time for everyone's favourite feature now as we celebrate the bizarre side of the beautiful game. And as usual, John, it will be down to you to choose between three of the very best. First nominee in this our end of season instalment has to be the Manchester United manager for a string of hilarious speeches. First on the Old Trafford pitch and then at the Manchester United Player of the Year award ceremony. He couldn't have been drunk both times, could he? Next up has to be young Jack Wilshere for what was certainly the biggest non-story of the season. You know what I'm talking about. Wilshere is now being charged for misconduct after leading a series of marginally offensive chants, which mocked North London rival Spurs. And last, but by no means least, let's take a second to laugh at FIFA one final time this afternoon after it was revealed that 5% of the FIFA delegates asked prior to that Congress last week actually didn't know who won the last World Cup. If ever there was a clue that something's not quite right there. John, for the last time this season, who is it going to be?
I'm gonna be biased. I'm going to say he gave us a lot of laughs, and I think there'll be even more laughs to come in this season. So I'm going to go Van Gaal.
Van Gaal, congratulations. Andy Gray, take us home.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that, take a bow. You have been amazing.
And that is really all we have time for this afternoon. Please join me in thanking John Christodoulou once more.
Thank you very much for having me again.
It's always a pleasure, mate. And of course, a huge thank you to all of you for taking the time to listen in. I think it's been a pretty damn good episode. And in case you agree, please do share the link to the podcast and help us to promote the show. Remember, the links to which are plastered all over the official Twitter page. So head over to @IOTPShow and get following to keep right up to date with us. Alternatively, you can hit like on our Facebook page at facebook.com shoreditchradio.iotp. And now, even subscribe for free to our podcast channel on the iTunes Store. I've been Adonis, we've been kicking some sense back into football, and this has been In Off The Post. Enjoy the Champions League final this weekend, and have a great summer. Tried tribulation, but I know God. The devil wanna put me in a bow tie. Pray that the holy water don't go dry. Yeah, yeah. As I look around me, so many motherfucker wanna down me. But enemy gon' never drown me. In front of a dirty double mirror, they found me. And I love my, I want you looking at me. Tell me what do you see? I love myself. I put a bullet in the back of the back of the head of the police. I love myself. Illuminated by the hand of God, boy, don't seem shy. I love myself. One day at a time. They wanna say it's a war side. Bomb in the street, gun in the hood, mob of police. Rock on the corner with a line full of fiend and a bottle full of lean and a mother wanna scheme. These days of frustration keep come to the front. Yeah, I duck these cold faces. Post up, we fight for a basis. Dreams are reality's peace. Blow steam in the face of the beast. Sky can fall down, we can cry now. Look at me, motherfucker, I smile. I love myself. And when you're looking at me, tell me what do you see? I love myself. I put a bullet in the back of the head of the police. I love myself. Illuminated. All y'all come to the front, y'all come up to the front. Baby girl, you, come on. Up your head and keep moving. Turn the mic up. Punch it. The fashion police, I wear my heart on my sleeve, let the runway start. You know the miserable dealer company. What do you want from me and my scars? Everybody lack confidence. Everybody lack confidence. How many times my potential was anonymous? How many times the city making me promises? So